RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Thursday morning. What is up, Richmond? Michael Phillips, MP on the Mic 910, the Fan 105.1 FM. We're worldwide on the free Odyssey app with the rewind button. Do we have an Iditarod update? We have an Iditarod update. That's what we do. This is day three. It's a tradition now. We'll get to that in a second. But a lot of you are weighing in on this arena situation. And far be it from me to say that the TV news deliverers are being overly dramatic in their pronouncements. But they're being a little overdramatic in their pronouncements, right? This is, I believe, the second time we've done a segment here on the arena where I've had to explain the arena is not dead. That's all you heard. All the arena is dead. The arena is not dead. I didn't even devote a ton of time to that in the 10 o'clock segment. We mostly did seating and UR. I just didn't think everybody would react the way they did. So let's go over this. The arena is not dead. Today, the House and the Senate, schoolhouse rock here, baby. The House and the Senate are going to propose their budget to the governor. The governor can send it back if he wants to send it back. The gamble here by Luis Lucas, by the people who don't want the arena, is that the governor won't hold up the entire business of the state of Virginia over getting his arena. And I don't know that that's a statement you can definitively make. The guy's got one term. He can't run for re-election. He's not running for president. This is it. This is all Glenn Youngkin's doing, is what he's got right here. You think he's not going to hold up the business of the state over getting this arena done? I think he'll do it. There's a chance he doesn't. There's a chance he lets it go and he gives it up and the project goes away. That's its own fascinating road to walk down, by the way. Because if I'm Muriel Bowser, mayor of D.C., I'm pulling my half a billion off the table, right? He doesn't have leverage anymore. Yeah, have fun. Go out to Largo, Maryland if you want. Have fun finding fans out there. You're playing at Capital One Arena, buddy. Here's a few cents. Good luck with it. Do the best you can. But I don't think this is dead yet. And the thing to remember is, when they proposed the arena, they had the votes. And they have the votes. If this were voted on today, if they brought the whole Senate together and said, you want the arena or no, it would pass. There would be more yes votes than no votes. Now, Luis Lucas, she's doing her procedural things, keeping it from coming to a vote, and she can do that. That's her position. That's her power. But it's important to remember, if at any point they call for a vote on the arena is going to pass. It's got the votes. The issue is, so far, there hadn't been a vote. Hadn't been anything. She's kept it from coming to a vote. Can she do that forever? Not if the governor sends the budget back with it in it, then she'd have to make the call if she's going to hold up the entire budget of the state of Virginia over the arena or not. Look, they fought over stupider things before. This is politicians we're talking about. This could go any number of directions. And I think Luis Lucas is betting that the public pressure would be on Glenn Youngkin for shutting down the entire state budget process to add the arena. But if he sends it back and she shuts down the entire state budget process for not having it, I think there would be just as much heat both ways. If he could somehow get it forced to a vote, there's going to be an arena. So it's not dead yet. I love the pronouncements. I mean, we do this at Sports Illustrated. We do this every week at Sports Illustrated too, right? Sports Illustrated, has it died yet this week? I don't know. Arena's not dead yet. That's what you need to keep in mind. There's still plenty of maneuvering available When it lands on, when the budget lands on Glenn Youngkin's desk and it doesn't have an arena in it, he can sign it, but he could also send it back. And I think he'll send it back. I think he views this as an important part of what he's trying to accomplish this year. And I think it's got the votes. It had the votes back then. I don't think anything's changed between here and now. He just needs to get it to a vote and taking a vote. And sometimes that's hard in the legislative process. All right, Iditarod update. We promised an Iditarod update. We are going to deliver an Iditarod update. We told you, Hazel, you got to jump on. You're our Iditarod expert here. We told you on 2 days ago, Tuesday, about the dude who punched the moose in the face at the Iditarod. And then the next guy shot him. Shot the moose, not right. The guy. Very
how
important.
Dare you punch that moose?
Very important clarification. They love their animals in Alaska. I don't know. The guy who shot the moose has been issued a 2-hour penalty for not properly gutting the moose.
Well, he continued, right? He left it for the third guy, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, I hope third guy gets a bonus 2 hours.
Right.
I hope he gets like an SUV ride to the next checkpoint.
Exactly.
Because he's the hero here. Third guy had to take care of business. The moose has been distributed as food inside the town. So that's good. It's Skowenta is the town. They're all eating good. They're all eating moose.
Moose jerky.
Moose jerky for everybody at the Iditarod. I love our Iditarod update. This is absolutely going to be a daily segment.
Me too. I'm happy. I mean, this is the Iditarod takes, I looked it up, 8 days.
Yep.
So we've got several days of Iditarod segments.
So he's got to finish now in 7 days and 22 hours because he's
right.
Getting a 2-hour. The question is, is a 2-hour penalty they add 2 hours at the end, or like you got to just stand there for 2 hours?
Or watch everyone pass you.
And watch everyone pass
Ooh.
You. Or is he allowed to take a nap for 2 hours?
That's
I'd
true.
Make him stay awake during his penalty, personally. I don't think you should be allowed to sleep during your penalty.
Got to do jumping jacks.
Officials said the 2-hour penalty will be added to his mandatory 24-hour layover. You got to take a 24-hour break during the Iditarod. That's probably for the dogs as much as the people.
Yeah.
I would guess. So Dallas Seavey's our guy. He's a bad guy. Bad guy at the Iditarod this year. 2-hour penalty.
He is a 4-time winner, though.
Sure. Can't get a moose, though.
Yeah.
How you gonna show
can't
your
read the rules.
How you going to show your face at the lodge after that? Hey, you can't get the
Especially
moose.
Especially the guy who gutted the moose.
Guy who gutted the moose. I mean, he's an Iditarod hero now. Absolutely.
Wally Robinson, I'm looking at you.
Iditarod update back tomorrow, so don't you
All
worry.
Right.
Don't you worry. Iditarod
I'll
update back tomorrow. We're going to get some theme music for the Iditarod update. Probably over the weekend. Probably not in the next 24 hours.
I'm on it.
But yeah, Hazel's on it. I'm not too worried about that. Congrats to the Richmond Spiders right out of the gate. Locked up the A-10 men's basketball title last night. Look, we're the home of the Rams, but I'll tip my cap when the cap deserves a tipping, and it certainly does to Chris Mooney. His effort this year, everything they've put in out there, and it was a big night in the A-10. A lot of consequential games, a lot of consequential action, which has seeding implications. We love our seeding implications these days. Of course, everybody knows how important it is to avoid playing two games down in Brooklyn, to avoid having to play that extra game, which VCU is on the verge of. So everything's seeding these days. When will they play next week? What'll go down? We're keeping an eye on that. And the ACC tournament as well. That's where we'll be next week. Thanks to our good friends at Cowan Gates. We'll be up there reporting live. Virginia Tech, UVA. UVA is going to have a fascinating week up there. They're already flying towards a fascinating Saturday big game against Georgia Tech, right? Home game, winnable game, but sitting on the bubble. The Cavaliers have found themselves really against all odds. Sitting on the bubble, need a win to take care of business, stay on the right side of that ledger, stay going forward in the tournament and not knock yourself out of the gate here. A-10 had a wild night last night. St. Bonaventure could not take care of business against George Washington. The Revolutionaries win 86-75, and that means VCU can now go no lower than 5th in the seeding. They can't fall to the 6th seed, so they'll be ahead of St. Bonaventure, which had to win them both, as we look towards March. Now, UR locks up the A-10 title with their win over St. Joseph's. They are the 1 seed.
If they lose in Dayton, the question is, or if they lose in Brooklyn, the question is, are they in the tournament, right? Dayton's in. As the champ of the A-10, be in. So Joe Lunardi, he was at the VCU game the other night. He's part of the St. Joseph's radio crew. John O'Connor from the Richmond Times-Dispatch caught up with him before the UR game, asked him that question. Hey, you got an A-10 champion here. What's going on? Do they deserve that consideration? Here was Joe Lunardi's answer.
Clear to me, at least, from an eye test perspective, that the Atlantic 10 is much better and much deeper. And is clearly, whatever the bottom was, it's been hit and it's bouncing back the other way. I just don't think it's bounced back far enough yet to help really anybody in the league, not named Dayton.
That was Joe Lunardi, of course, ESPN bracketologist, St. Joseph's radio crew member. That one courtesy of John O'Connor posted that on the X last night. Great UR reporter, of course, for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And I'm curious about that observation, right? That the A-10 has gotten better, has increased its reputation, right? It certainly took a hit. You know, you heard all those cries of got to get out of here. VCU's got to get to the Big East, got to get to the American, whatever it might be. Those have quieted down. One, VCU has had its struggles amid its coaching change, but two, you've got to keep in mind that this is a good league this year, and this is a deep league this year. And as you go to Brooklyn, Duquesne and UMass could win it all, and Loyola could win it all. Of course, not to say anything of ECU, Richmond, Dayton, St. Bonaventure, the teams that can traditionally win it all every year, no matter what's going on. And those are the things to me that say, hey, this is a deserving two-bid league. It's tough to schedule these days. The A-10 scheduled as hard as they could. You've got a number of talented teams. If UR can't get a look, even to go to the play-in game, you've got to ask big questions at a conference level here. And you've got to ask big questions about what do we do? How do we start gaming the system, changing the system, using the system to the best of our abilities to create more opportunities for conference teams, because that's going to be important in the country. You look at the Mountain West, the success they've had. You look at the Big 12, the success they've had. That's something the A-10 needs to look at, needs to find a way to replicate, because I think good basketball's being played night in and night out. I think it's a heck of a TV property. You look at the brand names and the markets up and down the East Coast. I think it's a quality basketball league, but you got to find a way to get your best teams, to get your top seeds, better looks in March. You got Joe Lunardi saying they're not even a bubble team. That's not a great spot to be in for the Richmond Spiders. That says if they get to Sunday, if they lose on Sunday in the A-10 final, he doesn't think they're going to get a look right now the way it is. Now, maybe a couple nice wins in Brooklyn could change that. Maybe some other results could change that. But that's a rough outcome for the A-10 to have a conference champion that's not getting that kind of consideration. I think that's something they'll absolutely want to take a hard look at. And I know that's something that Awad will take on during his show. He's live today, of course, 12 to 3. And next week when he is up in Brooklyn for the A-10 championship game. So the A-10 tournament will be in Brooklyn next week. VCU, big seeding implications out of the game last night. It was a little tenser than it needed to be out in Amherst. UMass took care of business. They beat Fordham. VCU fans were cheering hard for Fordham. Not a situation you find yourself in often, but Fordham was unable to make a final shot there. 66-64, the final score. UMass wins. What that means is UMass is in the barn. Their season's over, and so VCU will have to beat Dayton on Friday night, tomorrow night, in Dayton to get that four seed, to get the double bye. If VCU loses tomorrow at Dayton, which they're not going to be favoring that game, obviously, and we'll see what Max Schulga's availability is. If VCU loses in that game, they would be the five seed. Means they would play an extra game out in Brooklyn. Means they would play it at, I believe, it's the second game of the Wednesday session out there. So it's game five, Wednesday, 2 p.m. in Brooklyn. If they lose to Dayton, they'd have to play that game on Wednesday at 2 p.m. If they win, of course, they get the four seed. They would slide to Thursday. Wouldn't have to play on Wednesday. Would slide ahead to Thursday. That's a big swing. It's a big difference, too, in a conference where so many capable teams are playing well. And it, you know, it looks like, you know, Dayton will be right there in the mix. Obviously, we'll see how they look on Friday night. I would imagine they'll be aiming to make a statement after their loss against Loyola of Chicago on Friday. Loyola will be there. UR will be there. It's going to be a fantastic tournament overall. The other main news item this morning in the non-Mitchell Trubisky category, Mitchell Trubisky signing back up with the Buffalo Bills after his time in Pittsburgh is over. That one's a nothing. I just love what, like, when there's a single NFL transaction in a day, it's always like, oh, Mitchell Trubisky signing with the Bills. But then you get to next week, it's like the avalanche of signings when the legal tampering period's on and stuff like that gets buried. Good on Mitchell Trubisky for finding a way to sneak in. Zach Ertz, the other big NFL transaction yesterday, of course. We'll do a little Commanders talk here in a few, because we haven't done good Commanders talk in a while. But the other big local news item yesterday, the Alexandria Arena for the Wizards and Capitals will not be included in the Virginia budget that is going to be voted on potentially as early as today, sent to the governor's desk. So Luis Lucas, the senator from Portsmouth, who is in charge of the Senate Finance Committee, effectively kept it from ever being voted on. Now, we told you at the beginning, I thought Glenn Youngkin had the votes for the arena. Sometimes that doesn't mean everything in politics, right? The game's not played on the scoreboard. The game's played in back rooms and in procedural movements. Never came up for a vote. Never had a chance to go up or down. And now here we are at the end of General Assembly. Luis Lucas is playing a game with Glenn Youngkin here. How badly do you want it, right? Youngkin can make a scene. He can shut down the government. He can quit signing stuff. He can quit giving them their priorities. He can keep negotiating. But how badly does he want it? Is he willing to shut down state business over making this arena a reality? And that's the bet she's making, right? Is it Youngkin wanted the arena? He would like the arena, would be happy to take an up or down vote on the arena. But when he was denied that up or down vote, how hard is he going to go to the finish line for the arena? Will he hold up other legislation, veto other legislation? I don't know. A lot of that depends on Glenn Youngkin's future ambitions, right? If this is the end of the road for him, why not? Go down kicking and screaming. You're a one-term governor of Virginia. There's term limits. You can't run a second time. If he envisions himself running for Senate, running for office down the line, especially statewide, it's a bad look to hold up the whole state government over an arena subsidy for Ted Leonsis and the Washington Wizards and the Washington Capitals. So we'll keep an eye on that up there on at the Capitol down in Richmond as they wrap up the General Assembly. Looks like the initial budget that they're agreeing on will not include the arena. Doesn't mean it's dead, but we're at a point now where Glenn Youngkin is going to need to make a scene to get it considered. Is he willing to do that? Will that happen in the next 12 to 24 hours? Stay tuned on that. We'll stay tuned on that. You stay tuned on that. It's a very intriguing time up there as the General Assembly winds down. We're just getting started, though. It's a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us for the party. It's MP on the mic. I'm MP. We're off and rolling. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. A little Commanders talk on the other side. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Rolling right along on a Thursday morning. MP on the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM worldwide. On the free Odyssey app, breaking down a little Commanders news. We'll get back to college basketball. Don't worry, it's that time of year. We do a lot of college basketball, but the league year is going to heat up. We won't have as much time to go into it next week as I'm sure we would love, because it'll be our Cowan Gates ACC tournament live week starting Tuesday. We'll be up in DC for 4 days of great shows from up there. Tech, UVA. The works, really excited about that. But the news from the Commanders yesterday, I think, and look, I just want to dive into this for a minute because I think it's a nice glass of cold water for everybody. Nice little, everybody calm down here, because we had our excitement last week. The Washington Commanders have more salary cap space than basically any other team in the league. The Panthers are competitive. There's some other teams up there, but the Commanders may have as much as $100 million to spend this offseason. And I think when people first saw that number, they got excited. I can understand getting excited. We can get whoever we want. We can load up. The fans are envisioning an all-star team for next year with all that money. The reality is, the only players you can sign are players on the market. And yesterday, one of those players was signed. Zach Ertz, tight end, longtime tight end, knows Cliff Kingsbury well, the new offensive coordinator. Look, I was critical of Ron Rivera when he brought so many people in from a Panthers team that I don't know if it underachieved, but it wasn't successful. And I will be equally critical if Cliff Kingsbury brings in a lot of guys from an Arizona team that was not successful, that had 9 or 10 good weeks. And that was basically it for the Cliff Kingsbury tenure. And that's nothing against Zach Ertz, who I love as a player. And clearly they're bringing in a veteran voice, a guy who will set the tone. But I think people need to understand and people need to resign themselves. This is what the team's going to look like this year. It's going to look like some veterans who are there to set the tone, there to send a message. And it's going to look like a lot of young guys who are coming in to develop. And the reason for that is good players don't make it to free agency, right? Say it along with me. Good players don't make it to free agency. If you have a great tight end, you're not letting him get to the open market. Those guys are not going to be available. If you have a guy who's pretty good and demanding a lot of money, he could end up in free agency, right? We'll talk about Cam Curl in a second at safety. You can get pretty good guys in free agency, but you got to overpay for them. And it's generally not a good way to build a roster. There's very few teams have had success going that route. I mean, because you can name them, that proves the point. Brady's Buccaneers were a team that was assembled from free agent all-stars. That's it. In recent memory, mostly free agency is used to kind of, you know, smooth over everything else. A lot of the big names have been trades, right? You talk about Christian McCaffrey to the Niners, Matt Stafford to the Rams. Those are trades, not free agent deals. And Washington may still make some trades and may still have some opportunities to make some moves in that regard. But I don't think the free agency time is going to be as productive as you think it is. Now, maybe they bring Chris Jones in, right, from the Chiefs. I think he's the prize this year. That would be the name that you'd say, okay, they put their money to good use. But on the offensive line, everybody's waiting. You know, what are you going to do on the offensive line? I don't know that you can do a lot just in free agency alone. I don't know that your money is any good here in terms of grabbing quality players because teams aren't going to let them go. So I think you're going to see a lot more Zach Ertz's than you're going to see Chris Jones's or whatever it is, big name you're waiting for and you're looking for. I do think you'll see a big name running back when it's all said and done. I don't think these guys are going to be first off the board to get a big name running back, but I definitely think that's in play for them and would be a great asset to bring on as they get ready to break in a new quarterback potentially. Which, speaking of that, Adam Peters, general manager of the Washington Commanders, was on NFL Network from the Combine in Indianapolis. Haven't had a chance to play this clip yet. It's been sitting in the folder. Fingers been getting itchy. Let's let this one rip. Adam Peters on if he would consider a trade up to number one in the draft.
Is there a scenario where you guys would be willing to trade up to the number one spot and try to get in that number one seat?
I think we'd do anything to make our team better. So you trade up, trade down. Had a lot of really good conversations with a lot of GMs this week, really productive. So we're going to look through every avenue to make our team better.
Okay. Adam Peters on NFL Network. We'd consider anything to make our team better. It's not a yes, it's not a no. It's a great answer by Adam Peters, who does not need to be tipping his hand to NFL Network reporters at the Combine. Walter Football, which it hits, it misses. You should know the track record going in before I say this. They say the Commanders are not taking calls for the number two pick in terms of trading down. They're committed to staying and grabbing a quarterback. Obviously, you know, don't put all your stock into that report, but I think that probably tracks with the way most of us think the Commanders are going to go with that number two pick. And I think that it certainly indicates they would be open to coming up to one if the price was right and if their guy was right. As I keep saying, the road to the number one pick is largely out of the Commanders' control. If the Bears like Caleb Williams, they're going to take Caleb Williams. If you think he's that special of a prospect and you can get him, you go get him. And so nothing would be able to budge them in that, you know, outside of wildly overpaying, which of course, you know, I will never endorse. If the Bears don't like Caleb Williams, now you got a choice. And the choice could be to get up there and go get him if you like him. And the choice could be to stay pat if you don't like him enough to pay that price. But then the door is open. That's up to Chicago, though. That's not up to Washington. I agree with the strategy of stay at two, take a quarterback, start building a roster here, start building around that. And we'll get to, I want to get to later today, Mike Sando at The Athletic put out his first mock draft, which I think is pretty pretty insightful and pretty revealing about a bunch of things. But some other NFL notes here as we wrap up, you know, an NFL segment, do a little combine coverage for you, clean up what happened down there. Cam Curl was not franchise tagged. He's the safety for the Washington Commanders. The projection is he'll get $14, $15 million a year on the open market. The tag would have been in the 16 ballpark if they'd given him the franchise tag to start playing. He was mad about it on social media, and his dad, who's been very outspoken along the way, you remember the other day, his dad was very mad. He did not get a happy birthday from the team. His dad was mad about it on social media. That, to me, is a sign that the player does not understand what's going on much more than that the team doesn't value him correctly. No player should ever want the franchise tag. It's not going to provide you with what you're looking for long term. It hinders your bargaining ability. They should be happy the franchise tag is not on. If you're willing to deal with Washington, deal with Washington. And look, I think he'll get paid more elsewhere ultimately. I also have no problems with this group saying, we're going to roll with Derek Forrest. We're going to put this money in our pocket. We're going to spend it when one of our guys, you know, when we feel good about one of our guys. I like Cam Curl. I would love for him to stay. I would be willing to pay him $15 million a year. Give him 2-3 years guaranteed. You're not going to spend your whole salary cap in that time. But if there's hard feelings over birthday wishes and franchise tags, that makes me wonder if this is the right fit. And I do think Derek Forrest played really well last year down the stretch. So I don't think this is as big a deal as it'll be made out to be. And I don't think that Cam Curl is as much of a lock as people think he is to be a top-tier NFL safety, to be a guy who's down in, down out, you know, on the field and making an impact. I do think safety is an incredibly important position. These guys haven't nailed it in about two decades. That doesn't mean overvalue the guys you've got, right? We'll talk about this a lot this offseason. I'll say this a lot. When you're this bad, when you win 4 games out of 17, there's no, you've got to keep him, right? There's always that hand wringing of, oh, how could they get rid of him? Oh, how could they not offer him a deal? No, when you're 4-13, nobody is safe, and rightfully so. And it's a new group, and they can make their calls. Dan Quinn, Adam Peters, I trust these guys to evaluate safeties. If they don't think he's worth it, pocket the money. You're playing a long-term game anyway. I'm going to say this early. I'm going to say this often. This isn't the year for this team. I don't think this is a playoff team next year, just the way things are trending and the way they're building this roster. I think they can and should win more than 4 games. I don't think the dial's going to turn all the way to 10, though, immediately. I think that's going to take time, and I think that's by design, and I think that's deliberate. I have no problems with that. I will say, I'll double down. I don't love Cliff Kingsbury bringing his guys in because he doesn't have a great track record, right? You hire a coach with a great track record, you want him to bring his guys in. I'm not sure Cliff Kingsbury has that. The other item from the combine I wanted to mention real quick, they discussed, and this is not a big deal, but also kind of a big deal, they discussed finally using optical tracking and chip in the football to mark off first downs and to mark off spots. Obviously, TVs had the technology forever to draw the yellow line. We still have the ref walking in and spotting it about where he thinks it'll go. We still have the chain gang with the chain links on the sidelines. It's great. It's old-fashioned. We all love it. It is far overdue. Time for change on that. You have the technology. Use the technology. Accurately spot the ball quickly every time. Robot umps in baseball, right? As soon as it's non-intrusive, it's time to do it. I'm not talking about reviews, which bog down the game. I'm talking about a chip that says, here's where the ball advanced to. Here's where to spot it. It was or it wasn't a first down. Keep the game moving and get an accurate spot every time. We're at the point technologically where that should be very doable. All right, that's a little trip around the NFL. We'll take one more trip around the NFL in the 11 o'clock hour. I want to give you some thoughts on Mike Sando's first mock draft at The Athletic, because I do, this is a good day to sneak it in, right, here on a Thursday, where we're a little bit between college basketball days. Tomorrow's going to be a big one. We're going to get you ready for VCU Dayton. Going to get you ready for a great weekend at the Siegel Center. Women's basketball is going to be in full swing down there in the A-10. And of course, next week, Cowan Gates sending us up to DC to the show live from the ACC tournament. Good time to sneak in a little football talk. You know I'm never against a little football talk. We'll step aside. We'll be back after this. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Hour number two, MP on the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM. Thank you for joining us, whether it's live on the radio worldwide, on the free Odyssey app, and of course, day after or any time on all major podcast platforms, just type MP on the mic in the box and we'll pop up. A little 910 The Fan logo there for you. That's how you know you've made it to the right place. Like, subscribe, all the things they tell you to do, I will tell you to do as well. If we just get everybody to download the Odyssey app, then I could spend more time talking about sports and less time talking about the Odyssey app. Those things are important in life, of course. All right, NFL draft season and the combine wrapped up last week. One of the nice things about the combine for journalists and information gatherers, everybody's in one place there in Indianapolis. You go to the steakhouse, you go to St. Elmo, go to Prime. I think it's Prime 57. It's got a number after it. Maybe it's Heinz 57. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Prime Steakhouse in Indianapolis. It's the place to be. It's where the owners camp out. Prime 47. I was off by 10. I gave it 10 too many points of credit. Prime 47 in Indianapolis. I've been there. I've not had the steak, but I've had the beverages. And they pour a mean Bud Light. That's my official take on Prime 47. That's why you tune in to the program. Lots of information gets gathered. One such person who gathered such information is Mike Sando of The Athletic. We quote his information a lot leading up to the draft, and I'm always intrigued what the NFL personnel people have to say about other teams, because you spend as much time scouting out the other teams in the draft as you do your own teams. Coaches, GMs, personnel guys, whatever Adam Peters is these days title-wise, they will do mock drafts and mock draft situations based on understanding other teams' needs, who to trade with, who to get value from, who needs in this year because they're on the hot seat, who wants out this year because they're a couple years away, who has picks to give, what do they have to give. They will tease all that out in the coming weeks. And that's got nothing to do with the players. They spend a lot of time on the players. They also spend a lot of time on those draft scenarios. They'll do, I think they used to call them war games. I don't know if they're still allowed to call them war games or not, but they'll sit down in a room. Hey, what if we're in this spot? What if we're offered this? Would we take this? Would we ask for that? What's the counteroffer? What would we take? All those things happen. So understanding the other teams is often just as important as knowing what you want to do in the draft. Obviously, the Commanders are in a unique situation, number two. But I was really intrigued by a couple things in Mike Sando's mock draft on The Athletic. So I'll take you through that here, point by point. He posted it at theathletic.com. Obviously, number one is not a surprise. He's got Caleb Williams going to the Bears. I think the only, suspense there is whether they'll trade out of that. I get that Justin Fields was strong to end the year, and I honestly would keep him as a backup. I know that would make him unhappy. I don't mind having two good quarterbacks on my team, especially breaking in a rookie and you're not sure, if he's going to be good to go the 17-game distance, or maybe you do want to give him a little time off the top. None of that bothers me. It bothers some people. We had Craig Hoffman on this show yesterday. Bothered him. Or 2 days ago. I think that was that a Tuesday show? I don't know. They all blend together. Podcast platforms, MP on the mic. That's what you type in. You go find our chat with Craig Hoffman. He'd say, like I said, I would start Sam Howell week one next year, regardless of who you take as a rookie or start a veteran, because I want to give the rookie time to act. He said, well, what if that person does really well? That's a good problem. I like having that problem. But Caleb Williams, number one, to the Bears, that was unanimous among the six personnel executives he talked to, obviously, with good reason on that. Number two, the Commanders pick. Five of the executives said Jaden Daniels, LSU. One of them said Drake May. The quote here, I think people struggle with May's mechanics. And we've talked about this before. The word you're going to hear is lazy. Drake May sometimes makes lazy decisions, sometimes forces the ball. I think he remains a very safe pick and a very defensible pick. And for a guy in Adam Peters who watched the Trey Lance experience go up in flames, the Trey Lance experiment go up in flames, maybe he wants to play it safe. I don't know if people are saying this is who I think the Commanders will take, or this is who the Commanders should take. I think you're going to see a split. I think you're going to see people say they should take Jaden Daniels, because it's not their money. It's not their risk. I think when people tease out, they'll say, I think they will take Drake May because there's less risk, because it's a more solid play. We'll see. I'm obviously intrigued how that'll go as we go deeper. Number three, Drake May, of course, goes to the Patriots. So top three are going to be three quarterbacks. You can just resign yourself to that, make peace with that. Now, maybe there's trades, but there's trades because other teams are coming up to get a quarterback. That's what's going on there. Things get wild at number four, though, the Arizona Cardinals. He's got them taking edge rusher slash linebacker Dallas Turner of Alabama, who had a really impressive combine, turned some heads, great defensive player. He's absolutely a top 10 pick. I'm really surprised to not see Marvin Harrison Jr. here. Marvin Harrison Jr. is, by all people you talk to, the best player outside a position in the draft. And certainly for Arizona, you can find value there with a great receiver like that. They had Larry Fitzgerald forever, of course. The Cardinals might trade as well. You could trade down, get a bunch of picks. If you're thinking Marvin Harrison at four doesn't represent value, You move down the board. But going defense there would be interesting, because we get to number five, the Chargers, and he's got the Chargers taking Joe Alt, the Notre Dame offensive lineman, who's the consensus best offensive lineman on the board. He's got an interesting comment here, though. This is Mike Sando in The Athletic doing his mock draft based on what team executives told him in Indianapolis. He said, one executive said, he might be a right tackle. You're going to want to give the quarterback a run game, and you're going to want to protect them, but is it solid value? I just don't get that, another executive said, taking a guy to play right tackle. I just don't understand that. Shades of the Brandon Scherff decision in Washington, of course, right? Scott McLuhan came in, took Brandon Scherff at number five overall to play right tackle, and then during training camp, they move him to right guard. He was a lovely right guard. The Jaguars might cut him, by the way, in which case I'd love to re-sign Brandon Scherff, bring him back to play right guard, but there's no value in drafting a right guard number five. You can get right guards later in the draft. You can get right guards through free agency. It's not a position where you say you got to get them and get them early because they're going to go off the board. If you see Joe Alt as a right tackle, I don't know that he's as valuable now at number five. I do think he'll go early, though, and I think teams want him to play left tackle and will develop him into that. So obviously now he's got the New York Giants at six going Marvin Harrison. This would be a dream scenario for the Giants. You get the best player in the entire freaking draft at number six in Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know that it'll break out this way. I think the value proposition on Marvin Harrison Jr. is maybe one of the most fascinating things in the upcoming draft. And we'll dive into this more, of course, in the upcoming weeks. But Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best player in the draft, but there's also a lot of really good wide receivers in the draft. It's a deep draft at wide receiver. Rome Odunze from Washington, of course, had a great season. He's probably a top 10 pick. There's going to be a ton of good wide receivers out there. The market's producing a lot of good wide receivers. So is it worth it to go for the best one that early? A lot of people say yes, he's a sure thing, you know, as close to a sure thing as you can possibly get, guy who's going to be on all-pro teams, guy who's going to be great. He's so good, he's basically sitting out the pre-draft process. He's not doing workouts, he's not doing any of that. He's standing on his tape. He's standing on, here's what I did at Ohio State, and it's good enough. And absolutely, the consensus best pick, there are people who say it's Caleb Williams, but for sure thingness, it's Marvin Harrison Jr., but there's also a lot of good wide receivers there. That's why I find that one a little fascinating. Number seven, Tennessee Titans. Olu Fashanu, the offensive lineman from Penn State, second best offensive lineman. Look, it's becoming harder and harder to find good offensive linemen in free agency. You find one, you got to lock it down. You got to find a way to get that offensive lineman on your team for 10 years, 15 years. And so the way to do that is through the draft. Number seven's a great pick for that. I got no problems with that. Obviously, if Alt's still on the board, they would take Alt there. Makes a ton of sense for the Titans. Now, we still haven't heard J.J. McCarthy yet. I think that's an interesting one. He's not top 10 here on Mike Sando's list. He's a guy who could slide in, though. He's a Will Levis style guy, right? He could sneak into the top 10. He could be day two. If once you pass a certain point, generally speaking, those teams later in the first round don't need a quarterback. Now, you got a couple exceptions this year. But on the whole, those aren't quarterback needy teams. At eight, the Falcons took Jared Verse, Florida State edge rusher. Obviously, they need help on the defensive side of the ball. I think we're all assuming they'll get Kirk Cousins or Russell Wilson. That's an attractive landing spot for a veteran quarterback. Odunze, the Washington wide receiver, goes to the Bears. Brock Bowers, the best tight end on the board, goes to the Jets at 10. That's a guy, by the way, I have Washington considering him if they trade back, right? You think if they trade back, they're probably going offensive lineman. You got the two good ones, Alton Fashanu. Another name to watch here to circle, Brock Bowers, the tight end. The league has not caught up on how important a tight end is. A lot of teams are still undervaluing that position, but people are coming around on it. This may be the last draft where you can get a tight end as late as that and still get good value. People are beginning to see the difference a good tight end makes. So I think that would be a smart pick for the Jets. And I think if the Commanders trade down, that's a name that would immediately go on my watch list if they're in the non-quarterback club, if they're not trying to trade back and still grab a quarterback. I think that would make a ton of sense for them to go with Brock Bowers, the Georgia tight end. A little mock draft talk for you on a Thursday. Don't worry, we've got plenty of college basketball coming your way too. Chatting VCU, chatting all kinds of things, taking you up to 12 o'clock. High Noon, AWOD Radio takes over for 3 hours. Grant and Danny drive you home. You know where you are. It's 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Hey, AWOD, hey, you're hanging out with us. AWOD Radio starts in 16 minutes right here on The Fan. We need to brainstorm, though. Tomorrow is our guy JC's last day. We got to do something. I don't know what we're going to do. I haven't actually thought this out yet at all.
Why don't you bring him to the bowling alley? Let's bowl.
Let's roll.
Let's roll.
On Fridays, we roll. That's right. You won't even be here.
I won't.
You're never going to see him again. Wow.
I
could tell. It just hit you hard right there in that moment.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to the best of JC on the mic.
JC on the board.
It was JC on the board.
JC on the board was the phrase.
I think part of his best of has to be when he drove to my house to pick up the laptop. That was a really good segment.
Nailed it. He nailed it.
Yep.
I'm still stunned. That laptop returned in one piece.
You know who also is Lane Casadante.
Yes.
Anytime he sees me and he sees my laptop, he's like, I don't know how you got that thing back.
You when you go through TSA now, because like we went to Vegas, are you like triple vigilant now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that in Vegas I didn't have to take the laptop out of the backpack because I feel like I might have forgotten it again.
You know? Well, that was a red eye though, so you at least had an excuse there.
Yeah.
That was you got out late.
I did. And you know what was funny is I got to the airport really early, all right? And then they have slots so you could play before you go through TSA.
That's
so
a
I sat
wise
down
investment.
And I lost my final $20, you know. Just sitting, it was like a 25-cent roll, but I was just, you know, spinning that thing.
a lot of people lose their final $20 at those slot machines, no question. Have you seen this Mike Tyson, Jake Paul thing?
Yes, I'm so out on it. I can't stand the Paul brothers.
Does Mike Tyson have a chance here? He's very old.
Well, I mean, I don't even want to talk about it. Like, why are we giving them airtime? You know,
I'm intrigued as to who will win because I do think Jake Paul's more of a bit than like an actual boxer. But Mike Tyson's old. I think I like Jake Paul here.
I really don't want to waste my breath even picking a winner. Like I hate them so much. If you are going to pay money to see that boxing match, give money to charity too because that's lighting it on fire.
You watched the Netflix tennis the other day. Netflix is doing things now. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that? I missed the whole thing.
It was like just a regular tennis match. It was, you know, the production quality was pretty good. I have an idea for how to make it better next year.
I'm ready.
They need a semifinals and a finals. All right. So if you're watching, I think their whole idea is they want to make it like the U.S. Open finals. Everybody tunes in for one match, and it was Alcaraz against Nadal, and it was over in two sets. They only did two sets in a tiebreak. So I'm thinking if you're only doing two sets, why don't you bring in two more competitors and do a 1-4, 2-3 for one set, and then whoever advances gets to the two-set final. And then there's more squeeze there. There's more juice. You know?
There's more to watch.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of tennis. You can watch it all day. Yeah. You don't want to just be in for two sets and then out. No, that makes total sense to me.
What I wonder is because it's a live sporting event, I think they did pretty good with the viewing live. How many people decide to go back and watch it later? I just don't know, you know, because it's sports. You know the result.
You've got to not know. It's got to be a DVR style. Like, nobody tell me.
I'm going to watch this later.
Yeah.
But I don't do a lot of sports DVR.
No.
Post. Like, you could post, like, you know, 10 great games from the past. I don't know that I'm investing in the whole game.
Maybe NFL. That's about it.
I'll drop in on the NFL Network, and if they're showing something, I'll drop in for a few, but I'm not committing to an entire game that has already been played. That's a reach for me.
I'll tell you, my sicko friends from the Black Gold Fan Podcast, they go back and rewatch VCU games from like 2009.
They're like grinding on the tape.
Some of them are on YouTube. Yeah. And like from when Greg Burton was calling games like 15 years ago, and they're like sending me clips, and I'm like, what are you doing? Oh yeah, second half of ODU against VCU 2009. What? This used to be a rivalry.
Blaine Taylor. I've loved me some Blaine Taylor as a villain. He was the perfect villain. Mm-hmm. In terms of like golden era VCU, like watchability, that's pretty high though. Those are good years to go back and watch.
Oh yeah. I mean, as soon as Maynard came to the VCU, it was must watch basketball.
It really was. Yeah. Like in Shaka's teams were always super watchable. I think this team's watchable, but like not in the sense those guys were. And then you had Will Wade in the middle.
Yeah.
I mentioned Will Wade in the last segment. You sent me the Will Wade clip where he's like dressing down Greg Burton and Wes McElroy.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Will Wade clip.
I think Lane was involved in that too. He was just taking shots at all the local media. I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome.
It was full on unhinged, like, thank you for the motivation, boys.
We played back your radio segment at practice, and boys were fired up.
With some creative editing.
Yeah, right. Oh, man.
Can you imagine, like, Zach Joachim being in the middle of one of those? Yeah. Like, Odom just like, Zach, we read your story. Like, we tore you apart in practice today.
He might write an apology story.
whoa. Stop dragging me into this. Well, Wes was just as nice of a guy.
Yeah, I know.
Wes wasn't a flamethrower.
I know. Will Wade just, he wanted that smoke.
He needed that smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Will Wade didn't have enemies.
It was a chip on his shoulder kind of guy.
He was prepared to create enemies.
Yeah.
He even said, like, Wes, we did a little creative editing on your segment. Like,
What?
You didn't come in hot enough, Wes. You got to come in hotter here. If you could just be meaner to us next time, that would be fantastic. Zach Ertz to the Commanders. We also glossed over that today. That's a full nothing for me.
Yeah.
Things that are,
I mentioned like, it yesterday as like
that happened
it makes
during
sense
your show.
To replace Logan Thomas with another veteran, but that's a nothing burger for me. And in fact, I'm really teetering on losing my faith in Cliff Kingsbury. I don't want him to do the Ron Rivera bit of bringing in your former guys that you played with Arizona or coached with. I mean, that team was not successful.
Come to the dark side.
Yeah.
Come to the dark side. It's okay to know people, and it's okay to have people you like, but you can't run back the thing that didn't work.
Right.
Right? That's why you're up on Dan Quinn. That's why I think Dan Quinn is a better hire than people give him credit for. Dan Quinn is not saying, you know what we did in Atlanta? Why don't we just go do that again? He's saying, I learned. I've got new approaches. I've got new things. I'm not hearing that from Cliff Kingsbury. I'm hearing, I'm young and good-looking. Everybody watch me call some plays here. That's not doing it for me.
No.
Although I will say, Ron Rivera's on ESPN yesterday. He says he thinks they'll pick Jaden Daniels because of Kingsbury. I don't want Cliff Kingsbury picking the quarterback. I want him coaching the quarterback. I don't want him picking the quarterback. I'm all the way out on that.
I would love to know the ratings on ESPN for Ron Rivera. Stumbling and bumbling and yeah, this is a guy that we like here. We can develop him. It's all about building out your roster over 4 years.
Well, a lot of people wrote that he's like on ESPN. I think it was a one-day situation.
Oh, I would hope
so. I don't think he got hired by ESPN. I think they give anybody the courtesy. If you're an NFL coach for that long, I think you get the courtesy of getting a day in Bristol. And it was 2:00 on a Wednesday,
yeah, right?
It wasn't
prime time.
They didn't give him NFL countdown with Berman and TJ, you know, none of that. So that was just, hey, thanks for all the interviews over the years. You know, why don't you come in for an hour and you know, walk around on set and do your thing and wear a nice suit and everybody can remember that you used to play for the Bears.
Yeah, I think that's what they were doing. It was a Bears bit. I think if the Bears don't have the number one overall pick, they don't bring in Ron.
I think his media future is probably in Charlotte. Because he is, you know, if not like a legend there, the Panthers fans like him a lot. Panthers fans have warm feelings towards Ron Rivera, probably because they don't have a lot of, like, there's no Panthers greats. Like if they'd had a franchise with a Gibbs and a Lombardi and an Allen and you know going back, like they wouldn't have Ron Rivera in the esteem he is. But he took them to a Super Bowl. He had Cam Newton. Like I think he could go do Panthers radio or Panthers pregame if David Tepper still pays for a Panthers radio. I don't know.
I just would be really upset if he's actually on you know national television. Like it does say in his lower third, ESPN NFL analysts. Now I hope it's a one off. That was not fun watching that clip.
I don't think he's going to be a full-time ESPN NFL analyst. Because I agree with you. I don't think that's his career path. I don't think ESPN wants that either. But it also stunned me when Alex Smith went to ESPN.
Right. Well, that's the thing is that sometimes it's all about clickbait. And that's what I bet this video of Ron Rivera, I'm looking at it. Oh, 200,000 views here, yeah. And that was just tweeted out by Scott Abraham. He got the clicks at ESPN yesterday, and
Scotty Clicks got the clicks over at ABC7 too. Yeah. They're on the repost. Watch out for Scotty Clicks on the trail here.
I loved the tweet where it says Ron said he likes two guys. Let's go with the one guy he didn't talk about. That's a great tweet right there. Love that.
The whole thing where like you gotta pick Drake May, you gotta pick Jaden Daniels. They're both good. They're both good quarterbacks. You're not gonna get me off of that platform.
You're not gonna get me off the platform that Caleb is the best talent in this NFL draft.
Quarterback talent.
Best talent.
No, Marvin Harrison Jr. is.
I don't think so.
He's so good.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is gonna be really good.
He's
Caleb
so
Williams
good.
Is going to be a Pro Bowler. And you're gonna be upset that you weren't on this microphone saying they should go get him.
I'm going to be upset because I'm going to be raking in my winnings whenever we make this Caleb Williams Pro Bowl bet that we're going to make.
Oh, it's already on. It's already on. You can have the field. You can even have Marvin Harrison Jr. All right? Caleb Williams is going to be a stud.
All right. A-Water Radio today. What do we got cooking?
Everything. I mean, speaking of cooking, we're going to dive back into the Busty Burger bracket. It has gone officially viral. We've got people chiming in left and right on Instagram, Twitter. I even had somebody DM me on Facebook. They want in on this.
The MySpace is out of control.
Yeah, so I mean that it's just unbelievable how the feedback we're getting from the burger bracket. Everyone loves food talk. Craig Hoffman will join us for Commanders at 2 p.m. JP Flame from the Sports Junkies.
I know him.
To give his take on where the quarterbacks will land, free agent quarterbacks, this offseason. That's at 1:30.
You see our guy Cakes cashed at a poker tournament last night?
I sent Cakes a text last night.
Yeah.
I said, throwing up the bat signal. Michael Phillips and myself would like to be involved in a Cakes Classic.
Yeah.
Have not heard a response.
Well, he's too busy winning. He's
I know.
Too busy making money. All right, A-Wide Radio until 3. Grant and Danny drive you home. We'll be back tomorrow. This is MP on the mic. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.